This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More than 4,000 federal workers received layoff notices Friday, according to the union that's suing to block these firings. President Trump said that he's going to cut programs that Democrats support as a result of the government shutdown. Federal workers are not getting paid, air traffic controllers not showing up for work, and ABC's Melissa Adan says that could impact the holiday weekend travel.
The FAA is reporting an increase in air traffic controller shortages at facilities across the country, while the National Air Traffic Controllers Association president put out a statement saying workers are showing up, adding that the ongoing controller shortage predates the shutdown.
President Trump says 100% tariffs on imports from China will go into effect next month in reaction to what he called China's trade hostility. At least 18 people are dead or unaccounted for after the blast at an explosives manufacturing facility in Tennessee Friday. The cause is under investigation. This is ABC News. Four people were arrested Friday after a scuffle near the Broadview Detention Center outside of Chicago. Protests there prompted President Trump to deploy the National Guard to Illinois, but a judge granted the state's request for a temporary restraining order. The Justice Department is appealing, but Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, a Democrat, said the legal fight will continue.
We're going to take them to court. We think we're going to get the right results because we know that it's unconstitutional for him to attack our states and our cities the way that he has.
Venezuelans living in Florida reacted to this year's Nobel Peace Prize winner, Maria Machado, a Venezuelan opposition leader who is still in the country but living in hiding. Leonardo Wilfew said,
"And I'm so glad, not only for her, but also for my country. She is an extraordinary woman."
She thanked President Trump for his support, dedicating her win to the Venezuelan people and President Trump. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Hey everybody, Todd Allball here. Did you know Packer Love is international? Join us Wednesday from the Marcus Theater in Waukesha for the world premiere of No Packers, No Life, the story of Japanese Packers fans.
There's a Wisconsin story about our state, our team, who we are, and then there's a universal story about people from all over coming together, regardless of culture, distance, language barrier, and finding amazing community over something completely unexpected.
Join us Wednesday, 2 to 4 for the Todd Allball Show.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for Matt Mayer on air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
For Civic Media News, I'm Charlie Pittman. Some messages say the radical left Democrat shutdown. Others just mention a lapse in funding. Legal experts are warning that some of the messages about the federal government shutdown may violate the Hatch Act. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Public News Service has more.
As Washington continues to bombard the public with political rhetoric about the government shutdown, some law experts argue these messages could be breaking a law put in place to prohibit political sway by the executive branch. The Hatch Act prevents officials from using their authority to politicize the federal workplace, and it ensures nonpartisan administration of government programs. Delaney Marsco with Campaign Legal Center says things like government websites displaying messages that blame one political party for the government shutdown are skirting the line of Hatch Act violations.
Specifically mentioning a political party, kind of targeting a political party, does come a little bit closer to that definition of what political activity is.
About 18,000 federal government employees in Wisconsin could be impacted by the shutdown and potential layoffs. A recent Gallup poll shows only 1 in 3 Americans trust the federal government to act in society's best interests, regardless of political affiliation.
The whole ethics system, from like conflicts of interest law to the Hatch Act, all of that exists to try and create an ecosystem where political coercion doesn't exist.
Marsco says she's concerned about the systemic dismantling of these ethics guardrails, pointing to the firing of inspectors general or threats to defund oversight offices as examples.
The more awareness the public has about the guardrails that are in place, they can hopefully understand that it doesn't have to be this way.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for Matin Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. 67 today under mostly sunny skies. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 46. Mostly sunny for Sunday and a high near 71. Slight chance of a rain shower Sunday night, lows in the mid-50s. Slight chance of a shower Monday, otherwise partly sunny and 70.
Right now, 38 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight from HBO's Task, I welcome Jamie McShane and comedian and host of the WGN Morning Show, Mike Toomey. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
Welcome into another Saturday morning of sports talk across the Civic Media empire. I'm Jimmy Cuska, the sports director here at Civic Media, and we have, as always, promised to bring you all of the best sports talk discussion from the week across our Civic Media stations, from statewide sports to local. And the panel today includes Gray Gunderson up in Park Falls. Gray, what's up?
How's it going, Jimmy? Going well here.
Conrad Krieger in Green Bay. Conrad, how's it going out east?
It's going well.
And over in Madison, we've got Parker Olson. What up, Parker?
Doing pretty good. Pretty busy day. A lot to look forward to.
We have a lot to cover today. There are some big games on the plate today, and we are going to get started in our show here in just a moment with the top 7 at 7. Later in the show today, we're going to go through the high school football playoff matrix with WFCA President Brian Kaminsky, and we'll get a rundown on the Badgers' homecoming game with Iowa with Jake Kokorowski of BadgerObserver.com. So a lot to get to today, but we start every show with the top 7 at 7. Number 7 in the top 7 at 7, how are you feeling after game 4 with the Brewers and the Cubs? We will start with Conrad.
It was a rough game to watch. Giving up a home run in the first inning off a fastball right down the plate is not good looks. One thing I did not like was the lineup choice that Pat Murphy made in this game 4. I just want to see game 5 have a different lineup.
You know, a lot of people are talking about Yelich batting leadoff, and that seemed to be kind of the start of some of the things, hoping he'd play more of an RBI role in that. We go over to Parker. Parker, how are you feeling after game 4?
Not happy, Jimmy. Frankly, I don't know that I have ever turned off a Brewer game out of like a rage quit in my life until game 4. I was so fed up with what was going on, just all around not good. Really disappointing to see when you were really hoping that the Brewers could go into Chicago and kind of rub it in the Cubs' face that they were on top of them so much right out of the gates. But now what we're getting.
We'll talk more about the Brewers and the NLDS here in just a minute, but let's move on. Number 6 in our top 7 at 7. What do you make of the latest Giannis rumors? Report says that the Bucks have been discussing a trade with New York for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Conrad, we go to you.
We hear this every year. Every single year we hear, oh, Giannis wants to leave. It's just big reporters trying to make a story, I feel like. I think Giannis loves Milwaukee. Every year he wants to play hard for this team. I don't get why he would leave when this is his team.
Gray, this is something we see pretty commonly in any sport, but it just seems like it's been nothing but the national writers trying to move Giannis out of Milwaukee for 13 years now.
I've realized that for my part, personally, I'm at the acceptance stage of this. I've just kind of drilled into myself that this is going to happen again, whether I've seen these headlines or not. I'm going to. Death, taxes, and Giannis leaving Milwaukee rumors at this point. But when I say that it's acceptance, I also realize that that is one of the stages of grief. So I think I might have skipped the bargaining phases and the depression. Or I might end up depressed if he does leave, though. I'll admit, there's grief involved. I've got a complicated position on that one.
Yeah, and I think all of us would be right there with you. Number five in our top seven at seven. Now, this is a stat that I've seen all over social media this week. Bengals receiver Ja'Marr Chase has four tackles this season. Packers defensive lineman Micah Parsons has three this season. Are we worried that Micah Parsons is a bust? Gray.
No, absolutely not. But Micah Parsons, while he may have three tackles, has 2.5 sacks, which places him for second at the team. And keep in mind that he's being double teamed at an absolutely absurd rate. Nearly 100% of snaps with Micah Parsons on the field see two guys blocking him or some other creative resource sink in stopping Micah Parsons. He's one good game away from being on pace, not for the lead in the league perhaps, but two good games away from some being a real terror. That might sound like coping even to me, but I'm not worried yet.
Parker, what's your take?
Gray, I think you're right on top of it. It doesn't matter to me necessarily what his stats look like. Obviously, stats are that flashy thing that you want in somebody that's in a huge starting role. But let's be honest, he is pulling so much attention that he has elevated not only the rest of that D-line, but frankly, the rest of the entire defense. I think the Packers are significantly better with him. Any player that makes your entire team better is not a bust.
Number four in the top seven at seven, we're going to follow up on how we were feeling about game four by asking, is Pat Murphy micromanaging the NLDS? Conrad.
I got to say, why mess with a lineup that worked in game one and game two? Game three, we didn't see Vaughn in it, which really confused me. And game four, we saw Bryce Terang in the cleanup spot. I just don't get why he wanted to change it after the success and how hot the bats were in game one and game two.
Parker.
I'm with you, Conrad. I would really like to see somebody like Sal Frelick, somebody who just gets on base, get them higher up in that lineup, get some guys behind that can actually drive them in. And frankly, I feel like I might be in the minority on this. I haven't heard a ton of people talking about this, but I don't understand why game two was a bullpen game. That just doesn't make sense to me. Why would you exhaust so many guys? And I know they're only getting an inning or so it's not a huge deal, but that's getting up and down. That is going to do something on your arms. I didn't get that. And I don't love the fact that we used Priester in Chicago rather than in Milwaukee. That kind of felt like a recipe for disaster in my mind.
Number three in our top seven at seven, put on your meteorology caps. What's your forecast for Wisconsin's football homecoming? Parker.
I'm just excited to see some throwback uniforms today for the Badgers, and I'm excited to watch some good punts. Hopefully we get some cool wind pushing off the lakes, make some really long punts. That's what I'm looking forward to, Jimmy.
Oh, boy. Gray, what are you looking forward to?
Hoping for good wind. I'm looking forward to something hopefully more worth watching than that. Listen, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the Badgers run defense as maybe the sole thing that we could look toward as something hopeful. And since then, we've seen that that is not going to be the case. So maybe we can just hope to see the Badgers capitalize on a home field rivalry game. That, if anything, could be their advantage today is the sound of the crowd. Let that bolster them, because I don't know what else will.
All right, number two in our top seven at seven. We'll talk more about this game a little later in the show, but right now we want to get Gray's take on what we're expecting Sunday with the Packers and the Bengals.
I'm immune to simple answers in this case, I'm afraid. What I expect on Sunday is to learn what to expect for the rest of Green Bay's season. If they can get right against the Bengals, then that will signal to me that those scary moments that we've seen, like letting the Dallas drop 40 for some reason out of nowhere, that's not the norm. Right now, at this point, we're a two-win team. Call it what you will. Four games in, the Packers are currently a two-win team. And just like Xavier McKinney said, a lot of teams start 2-0 and then they amount to nothing in not so many words. So I'm watching to basically decide what to expect on Sunday against the Bengals. My one fear is that Joe Flacco will take the hit to make the throw. Jake Browning would not. And that, if anything, is a simple upgrade that can make a big difference.
That brings us to our number one in our top seven at seven. And this is going to be a question for all of us on the panel today. Who wins today in game five of the NLDS, the Brewers or the Cubs? Conrad, you're up first.
I'm going to say Brewers just because I'm a huge Brewers fan, but it seems like we lost all momentum, so I'm not too confident.
All right, let's go to Gray. Gray, your forecast for today.
Conrad, I admire the self-awareness there. I'm going to go the very same. If you want to, if you want me to pull out a reason, wishful thinking, if nothing else, but it's possible. So I'm going to choose to believe it happens.
All right, Parker, what's your prediction for today?
I refuse to believe that the Brewers get reverse swept by the Cubs, and I refuse to believe that it happens in Milwaukee. I'm expecting the Brewer bats to finally get going a little bit. Hopefully a little bit of that crowd energy can will them into being actually like themselves and looking like they finished the season with the best record in baseball. That's just a hope. It would be crazy if they actually did that, but that, you know, it'd be cool.
That is our top seven at seven with our panel here of Parker, Conrad, and Gray. They'll rejoin us here after our interview in the next segment. We'll go through all of the college sports happening, and we'll also take a look at what's coming up on our civic media calendars. That's all coming your way here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's time now for an update from Civic Media's Mike Clemens.
Game 5 tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field in Milwaukee, where it's the Brewers and the Cubs here to decide their National League Divisional Series. The first pitch tonight, scheduled for 7:08 Central Time. Now, don't miss the start of the game. Of the 35 combined runs scored in this series so far between the two teams, 21 of those have been scored in the first inning. That's a new Major League Baseball record for the postseason. Brewers manager Pat Murphy asked about the series returning to Milwaukee for one final game.
You guys had it the first two. They've had it the next two. Going into a winner-take-all game five, how do you guys get that momentum back on your side?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that you can't force. You know what I mean? Momentum in baseball happens based on what's on the field. You know what I mean? And the Cubs earned it. They had their backs against the wall, and they played great these last two games. They pitched great. They played great. They played great defense. They hit in the clutch. They hit homers. They're built to be great, and they played great these two games. So hopefully the tables will turn when we get into game five at our place. But, you know, we have to find out how bad, you know, we're going to fight back. We have all season. This is not a team that has strung together a losing streak or anything like that. And they've done it in a number of different ways. So I admire our team. I have faith in our team. And I think this had to happen this way. There'll be no tougher environment to play in than they just did. This is a good prep for us. And I think, you know, we'll be ready to play. I'm certain we'll be ready to play in game five.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks off to a good start in the preseason with a record of 2-0. They beat the Pistons at five-serve form Thursday night, 117-111. On Tuesday, ESPN released more information about the talks the Bucks reportedly had to trade Giannis Antetokounmpo to the New York Knicks, despite making moves to retool the roster around Giannis in June and July, including adding Miles Turner from the Pacers. The report says that GM John Horst had to fly to Greece in August to meet with Antetokounmpo and his agent to listen to his further concerns and at least test the waters with the Knicks. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers asked to comment on this detailed story.
Another one. It's unbelievable.
How do you deal with it?
I don't. I mean, I really don't. I mean, what are you supposed to say? Like, I don't know how many more times. I've been coaching, and how many years have I been coaching? 26, 27 years. And one thing that I know is 30 teams call 30 teams, all right? Hey, would you like to trade Chris Paul? And you say no. That does not constitute a conversation, all right? You know, I read where it said several conversations. Well, that never happened. And it was a conversation where a team called, and John has been saying no now for 11 years. I don't know why this is a new story, you know, but I guess it is.
At Doc Rivers, the Bucks in Chicago tomorrow night to take on the Bulls in a preseason matchup. The tip-off time at 6 o'clock. College football, homecoming day today in Madison. The Wisconsin Badgers against the Iowa Hawkeyes. They kick off tonight at 6 o'clock at Camp Randall Stadium. NFL, the Packers host the Cincinnati Bengals tomorrow afternoon, 3:25 at Lambeau Field. On Tuesday, the Bengals, after losing three games in a row, made a rare kind of trade with the Cleveland Browns from their own division for Joe Flacco to take over at quarterback while Joe Burrow recovers from toe surgery. The Packers already faced Flacco week three in Cleveland when they lost 13-10 to the Browns. Meanwhile, the Packers defensive end Micah Parsons is looking at a second chance to get his first quarterback sack on Flacco. I asked him, are they more focused on the tape of the Bengals offense rather than what Flacco did in his time with the Browns?
Yeah, new offense, new players, I mean, completely. No offense to Cleveland, but nobody got two receivers like the Bengals. You know what I mean? This is going to be a completely different quarterback. I expect him to feel confident in the guys he's throwing into. Even some of the guys up front is a little better, a little bit more healthier. So I think we're going to see a different side of Flacco. So, you know, we got to be anticipated for that.
That's Packers defensive end Micah Parsons. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent weeks, the level of activity from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has increased quite a bit. There was a raid in Manitowoc at a Walmart parking lot where dairy workers were known to congregate, a series of arrests in Madison, and in Milwaukee, ICE is looking to expand its operations significantly by seeking office space downtown to go along with a new field office on the city's northwest side. This has been concerning for many, and not without reason. A recent large-scale ICE raid in an apartment building in Chicago saw reports of armed federal agents breaking down doors, U.S. citizens detained for hours on end, and children being dragged from their homes in the middle of the night. While the American immigration system has a host of problems, this kind of violent show of force is not an acceptable way to address these problems. And ICE also just received an injection of $45 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill, so it is imperative for all of us to hold ICE accountable and speak out when things go too far. Right now, things are going way too far.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. The Maggie Dawn Show.
State Senator Jeff Smith. We're talking about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. Republicans blocked funding for this.
They instead sent the governor a 16-page letter blaming him for this problem. Well, it was in his budget. Once the budget is out of his office and in their hands, it's up to them. Our job is to manage the funding. We can do it, but the governor can't. So it's avoiding our own responsibility by not addressing that.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back to Make the Call on the Civic Media Sports Network. Coming up, we will have our Campus Connection segment, and we will dive into high school sports from around the state. I'm joined right now by Brian Kaminsky, who is the president of the WFCA and head coach at Sun Prairie East in football. Brian, it's great to have you on. We've talked about this a few times in the past, but the new way of getting into the postseason for high school football, just a little background on the new playoff matrix. How did this come about? And how did we arrive to the point that we're actually putting this in right now this month?
Yeah, it's very exciting. You know, it's been a lot of work by a number of people, not just myself, but Andy Lavoie, Travis Wilson, Jesse Norris, Drake Zorbin, Tony Biolo, names upon names. Right? I know I'm forgetting people out there, but put a lot of time into this. And you know, really what happened is that we know there were a little bit of issues with the playoffs last year and who qualified and who didn't. And we felt that was a big mistake. And then when you start asking questions, nobody really had the right reasons as to how that mistake happened. So we wanted to find a system that was more transparent, that everybody knew what came in and out of it, and something that you could track throughout the year. Some people could kind of see where they're at and understand why they were at. And so that really started at towards the end of last season, which doesn't give you a lot of time because you got to get it to a coach's advisory and it's got to pass the different channels at the WIAA and their office. And We ended up breaking it up into two different things where it would be used for playoff qualification, and then would also be used for geographic where you got put, which I think is just as big as a playoff qualification, right? You're going to have your top four teams are your one seeds and your next four are your two seeds. So the brackets should be a lot more balanced this year. And some opportunity maybe for a little bit more travel, but we looked at it, we vetted it over 3 years. The travel really wasn't that much different. I think on average, it was maybe 7% a little bit bigger. So while we don't like more travel, we felt the balancing of the brackets was worth it. And really getting your top end teams into different brackets with the best opportunity to go to the state championship, because they've earned that right based upon their play in the regular season. So couldn't be more excited for it. Andy Lavoie has done a great job of entering the data after every week and promoting and releasing it so teams can follow it and see where they're at every week. It changes every week. And I think the other great aspect of it was knowing what division you're in before the season, right? We're one of those teams that were on a bubble. Are we Division One? Are we Division Two? Had no idea. Well, now we know our Division One before the season. We know we got to compete against these 50-some teams, and the top 32 are in. And I think the biggest thing people got to realize is if you're in Division One, you live in the Division One world. Don't worry about what's happening in Division Two, 7, 6, 5, 4, whatever else. You're just competing against those teams. So we're very excited for it. I think it's going to add to a lot of great things, and couldn't be more excited for the playoffs to hopefully come around here in a couple weeks.
Brian, this was well received by coaches. I remember in the surveys you issued, and then again at the WFCA clinic when the straw poll showed just really good support for it. What are you expecting now with the release of the final brackets for 8-player first of all today, and then for 11-player a week from today? The final brackets and everything. Is there anything that you're expecting or hoping for when the brackets are laid out?
Yeah, I just said it all comes to fruition, all the hard work, and it gets played out the way it is. 8-player presents a few more challenges than 11-player just because of teams forfeiting some games or maybe joining 8-player late. So there's a couple of different things within the nuances, within the rules as far as how that gets done. So that's a little bit trickier. But, we've been able to compare our results with the WIA's results week after week and hopefully get everything figured out. And that's the beauty about this too, right? You have a checks and balances now that hopefully after week three, you compare it and you resolve and you figured out what the differences were and you got those solved. So in theory, by the end of the games Friday night, it should be put in the computer and everybody should know who's in and who you're playing right then and there. And there should be no problems. So, we're excited for that. We had great support by the coaches, right? We had we had 400 out of 420 head coaches respond. And I think it was like 88-89% of the coaches were all in favor of this. So that spoke volumes to the amount of work that was put into the different people behind the scenes. We held Zoom meetings. We took input from them. We had surveys. We gave it to the ADs. We gave it to superintendents. We talked to all the people that were involved in the next levels. And it's just been very well received. So we couldn't be more excited to see us come together here this season.
Read a lot of positives in the feedback from this too, just from the social media chat. There have been some people that maybe don't understand the full process of the point system. And not that I'm looking for the 11-point video on how it comes to be, but can you simplify perhaps what goes into the playoff matrix?
Yeah, you want to beat good teams. That's really what it comes down to, right? If you're playing us and you beat Sun Prairie East, then you want Sun Prairie East to win the rest of their games because we're going to accumulate our points. And then guess what? Because you beat us, you're going to get our points as well. So that's basically the premises of it. You're getting rewarded for beating good teams a little bit more than just saying, boy, if you have four wins, you're in the playoffs or whatever it might be. So now it's not only wins, but it's quality wins. And your quality wins are going to be rewarded that much better. And then, again, you just got to finish in the top 32 of that division, and you're in the playoffs onto week 10.
And Brian, my last question for you is just on you mentioned this earlier, just the fact that the divisions are set before the year. I know that just a few years ago we had the statewide conference realignment. So every 2 years, schools are realigned in the conferences, and that at the time was to sort of help address some of the imbalances and inequity and playoff qualification, where some conferences might only have 5 teams, others might have 10. But now with this system in place, do you see anything maybe potentially changing now that we've got the preset divisions and the biannual realignment of conferences? Do you foresee any changes there?
Yeah, we hope it slows it down a little bit. I feel like there's been too much jumping ship every 2 years for different reasons, and we get some of them, but it's just hard to maintain and follow who's in what conference and get a feel for that. We feel now that every game matters, right? Now it's factoring in your non-conference games as well. So You know, if you feel you can't get the wins you need to in conference, well, you know what, you schedule those two non-conference games and those can help you as well. So we hope that that slows down a little bit of that realignment process. By no means is it going to end it, because people are always looking for their next best way to make the playoffs. But I think this gives you a little bit another of an avenue when you can say you can control hopefully two teams that you can find non-conference that can help you and benefit your program as well.
Brian, I appreciate your time and all the insight into the playoff matrix for football this year. Thanks and good luck the rest of the season.
Hey, man, thanks all you do for covering high school sports. It's been a great ride following you along, and we really appreciate it. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Brian. And as always, just appreciate the partnership with the WFCA and everything they do for high school football and high school sports in Wisconsin. A really well-run clinic I got to attend this fall with them, and getting to learn more about this playoff matrix process and a lot of impacts, as we're going to find out here later today with the 8-player brackets being released. And then, of course, next week when the 11-player brackets are set. Coming up next, it's our Campus Connection segment. Jake Kokorowski of BadgerObserver.com is next on Make the Call.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More than 4,000 federal workers received layoff notices Friday, according to the union that's suing to block these firings. President Trump said that he's going to cut programs that Democrats support as a result of the government shutdown. Federal workers are not getting paid, air traffic controllers not showing up for work, and ABC's Melissa Adan says that could impact the holiday weekend travel.
The FAA is reporting an increase in air traffic controller shortages at facilities across the country, while the National Air Traffic Controllers Association president put out a statement saying workers are showing up, adding that the ongoing controller shortage predates the shutdown.
President Trump says 100% tariffs on imports from China will go into effect next month in reaction to what he called China's trade hostility. At least 18 people are dead or unaccounted for after the blast at an explosives manufacturing facility in Tennessee Friday. The cause is under investigation. This is ABC News.
A showdown in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers and Cubs square off for Game 5 tonight. The winner will advance to the National League Pennant Series against the Dodgers next week. Last night, Pat Murphy telling reporters he'll likely go with a variety of pitchers from the Brewers' bullpen, including Jacob Mizorowski, Aaron Ashby, and Quinn Priester. College football homecoming today in Madison. The Wisconsin Badgers hosting the Iowa Hawkeyes. And tomorrow in Green Bay, it's the Packers against the Bengals and newly acquired quarterback Joe Flacco. Xavier McKinney on facing Flacco a second time this season when he was with the Browns.
I was actually thinking about kind of the other way around of kind of what he saw from us the very first, when he was with the Browns, what he's already kind of seen us do. So I was thinking about this kind of ways that he might try to come into this game having different players and a different scheme.
That's Packers safety Xavier McKinney with sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Normally, I prefer to see movies in the theater, but we'll have to rethink that when Minecraft 2 comes out. Variety reports a Minecraft sequel is in the works after the first flick made almost $1 billion worldwide. Not sure if you remember or heard this, but there is a zombie chicken baby scene that made teenage boys do very gross things in the movie theater. You might want to sit that one out and wait for it to stream. Minecraft 2 is scheduled to hit theaters July 23rd of 2027. Variety is also reporting that Bradley Cooper is in talks to star in the prequel of the Ocean's 11 franchise. The film will be set before the first Steven Soderbergh version of Ocean's 11 in 2001. This franchise is a remake of the original Ocean's 11 from 1960 that starred Frank Sinatra and some of his Rat Pack pals. The new film is rumored to be set in 1960s Europe. Margot Robbie is already on board to play the female lead. They are really milking this ocean thing. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
Your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman, 67 today, under mostly sunny skies. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 46. Mostly sunny for Sunday and a high near 71. Slight chance of a rain shower Sunday night, lows in the mid-50s. Slight chance of a shower Monday, otherwise partly sunny and 70.
Right now, 38 degrees.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear.
Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. You can win tickets to the world premiere of No Packers, No Life at the Marcus Theater in Waukesha, and Jane Matinere is in to talk about headlines. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back to Make the Call. It is time now for our Campus Connection segment, and we head to Madison to talk all things Badgers with Jake Kokorowski, who is of BadgerObserver.com. Make sure you sign up, get all the details on football, volleyball, and more with Jake. Well, let's start with this. It's homecoming. Iowa is in town, and I know that people look at, you know, Minnesota perhaps as the bigger rival, right? The Axe is a really cool trophy, but I think Iowa's got to be up there in terms of the teams that Badgers fans get excited to play in a rivalry type game.
Yeah, and yeah, thanks for having me back on, Jimmy. And you know, the one thing, you know, Minnesota Wisconsin obviously is the, you know, the oldest rivalry. You know, the Axe, Paul Bunyan's Axe, is more glorified, I guess, maybe amongst both fan bases. But really, Iowa for me is, to me, almost like a mirror image of each other in terms of what they want to do. They're physical. Both teams want to be physical. They do it different ways. At least when Paul Christ was doing it, a little bit more power scheme, and you know, Iowa wants to be physical, but they have that stretch run. Both, you know, the defenses when these teams were facing each other, especially in the last decade with like Jim Leonard versus, you know, Phil Parker, it's something that, you know, low scoring affairs and usually special teams and turnovers played a role in the victory. And so, you know, this year might be honestly the same. It might be a harken back where both defenses are strong against the run. This is a team that, you know, Iowa's having, you know, quarterback, you know, in terms of health and stuff like that. They've gone through the same thing as Wisconsin. And so for me, I'm very intrigued to see just how this plays out. And how, I mean, it's at Camp Randall, it's at night, you know, and so for me, Wisconsin, Iowa, I feel it's always been, yeah, it's a red and a rivalry, but it's also been respect a little bit in my eyes. And also, like, yeah, you're kind of looking at each other through a little, almost mirror images, but just a little different on each side.
I feel like, too, for the Badgers, a key in this game is going to be trying to shorten the game a bit, right? Because when they're playing all these ranked teams in a row, or they're playing in this difficult October schedule, it just feels like there's an intent to shorten the game a bit to try to keep things in hand. And that worked for a bit last week, it seemed like, keeping the score relatively low. Is that kind of the same approach going into this week with Iowa?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to get that running game going. It's going to be very tough. Iowa leads the Big Ten, and I think they're like fourth or fifth in the nation in rush defense. They're only allowing under 70 yards per game on the ground. Wisconsin actually was top of the nation before giving up 175 to Michigan last week, even though that seemed like a good 175, if you will, just because of the fact that they held Michigan to under 80 yards under its average, and they give up a couple less big plays. It's actually right around 100 yards rushing there. But, you know, for Wisconsin, though, you have to have get some semblance of a run game going. You have to get some semblance of something to push down a field. I mean, it's also what Wisconsin has to try to do is with their pressure that Iowa will bring, they have to protect Hunter Simmons or whoever, Danny O'Neill or whoever is quarterback, because of the fact that, you know, like you need to have a downfield passing game in this scheme. That's how you keep defenses honest. And that's the same thing that happened during the latter years of the Paul Christ era, right? Where you see defenses stacking 8-9 on the line. You're starting to see stuff that's similar right now. So for me, it's going to be a key. No matter, this might be who knows if this is going to be the sixth consecutive starting offensive line combination. You know, we'll see just what the health status of Jake Renfro and others are coming up, you know, later tonight. But for me, it's going to be something that's going to be to watch. Just can Wisconsin finally get that run game going? It's a tough challenge against the rival, that is Iowa.
Well, last thought for you, because we have about a minute here. I know that these night games, too, end up being great recruiting tools, and I'm sure that there's going to be any number of great prospects in attendance tonight. There's something cool about Camp Randall at night, and I'm sure that any of the recruits that are coming in, they're certainly going to be in for a pretty cool experience.
Right. And that, you know, we have this up on Badger Observer right now. One of our things to watch for this game is really just looking at, you know, obviously you have the game stuff, but can Wisconsin lock in a couple more commits for this 2026 class? One is Yaha God, who's out of Tennessee, high three-star recruit, former UCLA commit. And he's, you know, projected to play outside linebacker. We'll see if Wisconsin can seal the deal there. There's also Torrey Davis, who's from Denver, was a UCLA commit as well. He's a playmaker on offense in Colorado, but based off of who he said gave the offer, it looks like he may be looked as a safety. Wisconsin needs those for both the 2026 class. So we'll see. They have a bunch of other 2027 recruits coming in as well. We'll see if the Camp Randall magic works for Wisconsin, both on and off the field.
Jay Kokorowski from BadgerObserver.com. Thanks for all of your insight and look forward to reading your work this week.
Thanks, Ben. Y'all take care. We'll see you next week.
Let's turn our attention now to our local colleges, and it is Campus Connection and our WIAC weekly feature with Parker Olson. And Parker, this week, UW-Whitewater is on the road to play Stevens Point, a team I got to see last week against UW-Platteville. Stevens Point, they also, as Springfield did against Platteville, ran a triple option offense, really? Which I found really interesting.
Huh. I did not know that Point was doing that. That's exciting. I always like seeing a fun little new defense or offense.
So Whitewater Stevens Point, it might seem on paper that it's a given, but it is a road game for the Warhawks, who after last week's double overtime thriller should be in for something a little easier this week on the schedule.
Absolutely. Yeah. My prediction on warhawkfootball.com was basically this is the perfect game for Whitewater to work on the things that they're bad at. So that means actually work on that pass game, establish some kind of deep threat, because Whitewater has not seemed very willing, especially against La Crosse, was not willing to throw any deep ball at all. So I'm looking for Klinkner, to actually get the ball going past, I don't know, the line of scrimmage, because it didn't seem like he was throwing past there very often. So I'm kind of hoping for Whitewater to do that against Stevens Point, who's trying to establish some kind of momentum in the WIAC, which I unfortunately don't think will happen this week.
All right. Well, the other games this week include Oshkosh visiting Stout at Donnanona Williams Stadium in Menominee. That's an intriguing matchup, just given that Oshkosh just played in another one of those great games last week. And Stout, Stout is off to a pretty good start already in the conference, winning the War on 94. Speaking of the War on 94, the team they beat, Eau Claire, is at La Crosse. This is the annual game that gets locally televised, and it's at actually 11:30 in the morning. So Eau Claire is at La Crosse this week. And then Platteville is on the road to River Falls in what is probably the game of the week, the only matchup of top 15 teams in the conference this week. Platteville is at River Falls, a place that has not been kind to the Pioneers, where they have suffered some very close losses and interesting defeats over the years. That matchup should be very intriguing, as Platteville, I feel like, hasn't had the real stern test yet this season, and this will be the best team that they have played thus far.
Yeah, I think you're right in that. I really don't know how good River Falls is, though, frankly, because we've been saying for 2 or 3 years now, they're so close, they just have to get a win to get over the hump. And every year they've had a loss that they really probably shouldn't have lost. River Falls going into Oshkosh and losing, I believe it was 21-17 last week, was just not a very good look for Caleb Blaha. Platteville, you know very well, Jimmy. Platteville's got a great defense. I kind of expect if they can make sure that Blaha is a little bit more one-dimensional, if they can keep him from running too much, I think Platteville's got a pretty fair shot at winning this game. And frankly, River Falls just needs to prove it, that they're really good at this point, and I'm still waiting on proof.
In the other sports of the WIAC, volleyball has an interesting mix of non-conference events this weekend. Cross country is and golf are starting to head to the turn in their respective seasons here in October. We're going to talk more about these things in the weeks to come. But for today, we're going to wrap up our WIAC weekly feature with Parker Olson and myself. And we are going to turn our attention to what is happening on the Civic Media Sports calendar this week. So in addition to bringing Parker back aboard here, Greg Gunderson will join us back from the north, and Conrad Krieger out of Green Bay will join us here for this final segment talking about what's coming up on our calendar this week for Civic Media Sports. And we will start with today's games. And I don't know if you've heard, but there is a playoff baseball game happening tonight involving the Brewers. They play the Cubs. They host it in Milwaukee. The winner moves on to the NLCS, which begins on Monday, taking on the Dodgers. So I am going to go around the horn here, and I will start with Conrad. Conrad, with the Brewers and Cubs tonight, I think a lot of attention is going to be paid to this. And I think that the moods of a lot of people in Wisconsin sort of hinge directly on what happens in this game.
Yeah, it definitely will. One thing I want to see out of this, the Brewers, is not giving up a run in the first inning. That's all I want to see. That's just one thing that'll make me happy. I don't care if they get around the second, but if the first, I'll be happy.
Great. The Brewers playing the Cubs tonight. I know that baseball, I know you're a football guy, right? But it's still exciting to see an elimination game for both teams in a playoff game. That's fun.
It is. And for me, this is an entry into the sport. If I want to get interested, now is the time, and I'm turning my attention there. So like I said, I think last week, if you want to see when new fans get added, now is the time. But I could also just have my hopes crushed, like that time I got skunked in my first ever game of cribbage, you know, and I never played again. So hopefully it's not one of those situations. Shout out Grandpa.
Oh my goodness. I got taught euchre and I can't remember the rules at all. So I am the same as you. I am so bad at euchre myself. I've always been a cribbage guy. So, all right. Anyway, we're moving on to Parker on the Brewers and Cubs tonight. Again, I think a lot of our moods are kind of hinging on what happens with this game.
I think I'd rather just think about card games than stress myself out with this game. Jeez. I'm definitely hoping to see the Brewers figure this out. I know that we were saying earlier about how Pat Murphy, he might be kind of micromanaging and just moving too much stuff around. I am admittedly excited to see what buttons he pushes in game five here, see who he's going to call on, how much we're going to see of Miz, I think is a pretty big point in this game, because I don't know how much trust he's re-earned after those couple of really nice innings earlier on in this series. It'll be exciting to see, hopeful to see that the Brewers put together some offense and make sure that we have happy workers here at Civic Media and not sad workers here at Civic Media. Go Brewers. I don't like the Cubs.
Well said. All right. We spent a lot of time on the Badgers already in this segment with Jake Kokorowski. That's happening as well with a 6 o'clock kickoff at Camp Randall. Other football happening is tomorrow, the Packers and the Bengals. So let's take some time on that. And we will start with Gray on a preview of what's happening on Sunday, the Packers and the Bengals. Packers 2-1-1 heading into this game, which, Gray, I know for your spreadsheets, it's going to make those playoff scenarios a whole bunch of fun, right?
Oh, the playoff math. If anything happens to us by half a game, it better be for the positive. You know, if we miss the division by half a game in a tiebreaker, I'm going to be apoplectic. But at the same time, that rage is exactly one of the reasons that it's not like what I hoped for to start the season. But hey, I wanted to have feelings and I got feelings, whether the ones I like or not.
Conrad, I know in Green Bay, it goes as the Packers go in Green Bay. So what are you feeling? What are you expecting here with this game?
I'm really expecting us to get the run game started. I said this like last week and the week before, I think, but I really want to see Josh Jacobs have a good game. It's been a while, and I think that this could be his turnaround game where he gets something started going, moving on towards the end of the season, you know?
All right, Parker, it's Packers and Bengals. What are you feeling?
I am feeling that the Packers will figure things out on defense after a really, 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 really poor showing in Dallas. I would really love to see some more, I guess I'll call it push from the defensive line and really maintain that threat that they have sort of built up in those first couple of games. And that's what everyone was really excited about, obviously, with Micah Parsons there. I would love to see Joe Flacco on the ground. He may be comfortable in the pocket and know when he's got to get the ball out, and he is willing to absorb a hit. but he's an old guy. Let's just say it like it is. He's an old guy, and I hope that the Packers can kind of, you don't want to root for anyone to get hurt, but I hope he gets banged up and he gets a little worried when he sees someone coming in his face.
Yeah, Joe Flacco is younger than me, so hearing old guy in that context.
No, know, he's not, Jimmy,
makes me
is he?
Fight, so.
Ooh, Parker, you done said it.
I'm so sorry. Please don't fire me.
All good, all good. All right, we have the recap.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Trump administration confirmed in September it is sharing driver's license and Social Security information among federal and state agencies from a massive database of personal and voter data. A class action lawsuit by voters and pro-voter groups has been filed to stop it. Since May, 38 states have received requests to turn over voter registration and voting records, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. As of October 1st, the only state to have complied is Indiana. Eight states which refused to comply have now been sued by the Trump Department of Justice. The administration reportedly repurposed an existing U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services database for verifying immigration status called Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements, or the SAVE system. NPR reported in September that the immigration status of 33 million voters had been checked using the database. The new lawsuit contends, quote, Congress passed the Privacy Act of 1974 specifically to prevent the government from creating formal or de facto national databanks or centralized federal information systems that would consolidate sensitive personal information of Americans stored at separate agencies, unquote. The voters and groups are asking the court for an injunction prohibiting the administration from using personal data not allowed by the Privacy Act. We've linked the complaint from AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Seems like nobody in America agrees on much of anything these days.
But can we agree the federal government shouldn't tax people into poverty?
If you work full-time, you should be able to afford your basic needs. Don't you think? We're the Patriotic Millionaires.
We believe your full-time job should cover what it costs to live. We think your first $45,000 of income should be tax-free.
And multimillionaires?
We should pay more to fund your tax cut. Go to first45taxfree.com to learn more. A working-class tax cut paid for by millionaires. That's an idea we can all agree on.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I like these organized mazes much, much better. On our street, there were these triplets, and the triplets were like 3 or 4 years old. We were just talking with the neighbors, and next thing we know, the triplets are gone. They thought we were playing hide and seek, so even though we're calling for them in the cornfield, they're not calling back. And that was a crazy 20 minutes, a fearful 20 minutes with the sun going down till we found them.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back to the final segment of Make the Call for this week. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jimmy Cuska, and I'll take you the rest of the way on this morning's program. And in this segment, we go around the state and check in on local scores from around all of our Civic Media stations. Now, if you're new to this, it just means that we air a lot of games on our stations. In fact, we air over a dozen high school football games during football season each week right here on Civic Media's family of stations. And that includes from Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan. But we are focused on Wisconsin in this segment as this show only airs on our Wisconsin stations. So let's get started. And we will start in the southeastern part of the state, that is the greater Milwaukee area, where we have one station that does games, and that is WRJN. And they took the show to Burlington, where Burlington was able to get a 42-14 win over Westosia Central in action here this evening. Let's take a look at some of the other games. It was Racine Case defeating Racine Horlick 49-16 in action here tonight. In a top-ranked showdown in the Milwaukee area, and always a good matchup as Arrowhead and Hamilton got together. Number 4, Arrowhead 21, number 7, Hamilton 20 in a classic showdown there. In the Badger-Waterford game, always an entertaining affair. Badger ranked second in the state in their division, 34-10 winners over Waterford. Another ranked showdown tonight had Homestead taking on Slinger, and it was Homestead winning 28-14 in that matchup. For our listeners on WAUK, Waukesha West took on Maquonago, 10th ranked in the state. Maquonago getting a 35-14 win. New Berlin Eisenhower took down Waukesha North 26-14, and Waukesha South had little trouble taking care of West Allis Central 48-6 last night. Staying in the bottom half of the state, we head to Madison and southwestern Wisconsin, where WRCO tonight had a big showdown between New Glarus and River Valley. And the matchup lived up to all of the hype as it was New Glarus getting just past River Valley tonight, 31-30. Meanwhile, on WRPQ in Baraboo, the host Baraboo Thunderbirds took on 9th-ranked La Crosse Logan, and it was Logan getting the win 49-7 in that matchup. There were plenty of other big games from the South Central and Southwestern part of the state. It was Milton defeating Sun Prairie East 32-28. Brookwood took down Ithaca 13-12 in a close matchup. One of the best rivalries in all of Wisconsin is Wanakee and DeForest. It was all Warriors in this matchup as Wanakee took down DeForest 52-14 last night. And a conference winning streak that spanned 4 years has come to an end. It was Edgewood defeating Mount Horeb Barneveld 27-20 last night. Let's head over to the western and northwestern part of the state. We'll start in the Northwoods, where on WLAK, listeners there will be happy to know that Amory defeated Prescott 18-13 last night. For our listeners in Baldwin, it was third-ranked Baldwin-Woodville taking down Osceola 49-21. If you were listening on the Tap FM in Eau Claire, you got to hear a great one. It was Marshfield defeating Eau Claire North 43-35. Durant, Arkansas got by Fall Creek 28-6. How about this upset? 4th-ranked Holman falls to La Crosse Central 20-6 last night. We head a little further north. It was Somerset defeating St. Croix Central 16-14. Spooner took care of Bloomer 19-14. Rice Lake won a high-scoring showdown with Superior 48-42. And rounding things out for our listeners in WLCX in La Crosse, it was Aquinas defeating West Salem in a top-10 showdown 20-13. Let's head over to North Central Wisconsin. We'll get a quick word in on our Wausau stations, where we air usually a number of games, and that's no different this week. First, it was Wausau West taking on Eau Claire Memorial, and it was West getting the win 49-14 on WXCO. Also airing on WXCO tonight was Newman Catholic taking on Tri-County, and it was Tri-County coming out on top in that matchup 34-12. Later today, Wausau East takes on Lakeland. You'll hear it at 11:35 today on WXCO. On WCQM on Friday night, it was Phillips defeating Hurley 54-6. If we bring it a little further south to the middle of the state, over on WIRI in Wisconsin Rapids, it was Wisconsin Dells taking on Nakusa. Nakusa getting a 38-35 win in a thriller there. Meanwhile, New Richmond handled Wisconsin Rapids 49-14. And in a big battle for small school supremacy, it was Stratford defeating Amherst 34-21 in a top five showdown. Our last look at statewide scores happens in the Fox Valley and Eastern Wisconsin, where we had one of the best games in the entire state this evening. Picture this, a 20-point game entering the final stages as Bayport appeared poised to rout West Appear, but then West Appear recovers a couple of onside kicks and coming from down 20, defeating Bayport 48-45 in a fantastic clash on Friday night. A top 10 showdown tonight saw Manitowoc Lutheran defeat Hilbert 54-13. It was Kimberly edging Kakana 8-6. Ashwaubenon over Green Bay Southwest 16-7 for our listeners on WGBW. Pulaski over Green Bay Preble 63-35. Appleton East gets by rival Appleton North 13-7. It was a doubleheader at Titan Stadium. First, it was Lourdes Academy defeating Palmyra Eagle 42-0. And then Oshkosh North over Sheboygan North 48-6. Oshkosh West fell to Hortonville 33-5. And it was Notre Dame taking care of Green Bay West 44-7. Another close matchup saw Neenah defeating Fond du Lac 31-29. You can find more sports scores available now at boundwisconsin.com. And it is a big day for Wisconsin high school football. It'll be the first ever release of the high school football playoffs under the new points matrix. Now, the new system rewards teams for winning over good teams. And we'll see the first implementation of this system ever happening later this morning, as 8-player football will be seeded and placed into brackets. 11-player football will happen a week from today, and that bracket will include all 7 divisions of 11-player football. It is a brand new system. We talked about it earlier on the show with Brian Kaminsky, the president of the WFCA. You can learn more about the new playoff matrix and point system right now at WIAAWI.org. Click on the football tab, and it'll take you to a link that shows you what goes into the new playoff system. A big thanks to my co-host today, Parker Olson, as well as Greg Gunderson and Conrad Krieger, as well as Jake Kokorowski, and to Brian Kaminsky for joining me on today's program. This has been Make the Call on the Civic Media Sports Network. Have a great day, everybody.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Day 11 of the government shutdown. The ripple effects continue as thousands of government workers received layoff notices Friday. According to a filing from the White House Budget Office, the number exceeded 4,000 people, says ABC's Karen Travers.
The largest union representing federal workers slamming the firings, calling it disgraceful. And as the government shutdown drags on, federal employees and their families feeling the pain. Many federal workers receiving only a partial paycheck on Friday, the last payment they'll get until the shutdown ends. And next week, 2 million U.S. service members will get no paycheck.
President Trump announced 100% tariffs on Chinese imports next month, citing what he called China's trade hostility. Preparations are underway in Israel for the return of hostages after more than 2 years in Hamas captivity. As the first phase of the ceasefire continues, more UN aid expected today in Gaza. This is ABC News.